Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Europe plans to wage war on Russia without American help. How will that work out? The Europeans haven't actually gotten anything right recently. Also, will Trump's Board of Peace deliver peace? Or is it, as many claim, a substitute for the UN? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark here in Moscow. Well, we learned a lot of things in Davos, and we probably could spend hours and hours and hours talking about it. And I think retrospectively, people will talk about it. But one of the things that we came away with is that the Europeans are definitely prepared and planning to go to war with Russia. So, Mark, if they can't win in Ukraine, they can't help Ukraine win, why do they think they can succeed against Russia?
Because they're still operating under delusions of their own conception of their place in the world and their capabilities and what they perceive of as Russian capabilities. And they don't allow reality or you know, the way things have changed in the last 20 years to interfere with that conception of the world that they've beat up. Effectively, they're drinking their own Kool-Aid. They don't have a conception of how the world has changed in the last 5 years or in the last 20 years. And it is having a severe detriment on the EU, both economically, geopolitically, and of course, the sorry, very, very sorry state of their militaries.
And well, I would add the very sorry state of their leadership. George, Mark mentioned the EU, and this is an EU project in many ways. Is this their new organizing principle? Because the foundations of the European Union were security and prosperity. They're not delivering on either right now. And so the organizing principle is Russophobia. It gives them the right, if that's their focus, to censor dissent, shut down political parties, dismiss elections, all in the name of protecting Europe from big bad Russia. That seems to be the organizing principle for me.
I agree, Peter. That is the organizing principle. And there really isn't anything much to the EU now other than its obsessive hatred with Russia and its plan to eventually deal with Russia, destroy Russia, break Russia up, whatever this final outcome that he's planning on. And it was clear at Davos from the speeches, in particular of German Chancellor Merz, and here we can see the Germans have completely dropped all pretense that they're somehow a gentle Pacific power. They're not interested in refighting old wars, and you know this is a new Germany and you know different from the old Germany. Chancellor Merz was openly speaking about this war with Russia, which would be led by Germany. And this is very important. And then there was also the contribution of the Finnish president, Alexander Stubb, who also has kind of brought back old memories of, you know, Finland, of course, fighting against Russia in World War II. Finland, of course, took part in the siege of Leningrad, you know, and so on, committed atrocities against Russia. And he isn't completely oblivious of that, and was actually speaking very optimistically about how weak Russia is. And rather ominously, he said, and NATO hasn't yet entered the war, as if somehow this is somehow down the road when NATO finally enters the war. So this is a call to arms. But of course, what was peculiar about this aggressiveness was that it went together with a very anti-American stance that they took at Davos, and quite how they intend to fight this war against Russia without the American backup, that wasn't answered.
You know, Mark, there's the plan seems to me from the shores of the Pacific, Potomac, is that the Americans want Russia to be weak and they want the Europeans to be weak. This is their plan, to weaken both simultaneously by making sure that they're at odds with each other. Mark.
Yeah, I don't know if their direct plan is to weaken the EU, but that is definitely, at the very least, a consequence of their policies, right? By helping insist that Europe decouples itself from energy and general trade with Russia and becomes reliant on the U.S., of course, the U.S. in quantity can't meet with LNG the amount of energy supplies that Europe had cheaper and more reliably than U.S. LNG. But also, it's four times more expensive. And that has led to the deindustrialization of Germany. If you Google deindustrialization, Germany's going to pop up right immediately because of the number of the articles in the Western media. And it energy costs is a huge part of that. Of course, Germany also destroyed their nuclear power industry, which has very dubious, green policy, when you consider carbon costs and everything like that. But it's just a kind of a perfect storm energy-wise for Europe. And similarly, European companies, particularly energy-intensive ones, moved to the United States, right? Because relative energy costs. And that is a consequence of the U.S. demand that Europe decouple itself from Russia and become more dependent on it. And they've demanded the same, that Europe do the same with China, by the way. Europe is still kind of hemming and hawing at that, but they have gone along to a significant degree, particularly in the semiconductor industry as well.
You know, George, it looks, the Europeans are just quarreling with everybody. They're quarreling with the Americans. They're quarreling with the Russians. They're quarreling with the Chinese. I mean, this is just a grand illusion that they're living in. I mean, you know, great power politics, geopolitics is about balancing and predictability and all of that. The Europeans end up, they're in a lose-lose situation, and they're doing it on steroids.
No, that's what was so peculiar about Davos this week, because they went in there, the Europeans, that is, they went in with this very belligerent attitude towards President Trump on Greenland. You know, absolutely nothing. This is an existential matter for us. We're not going to concede on anything. And then even when it seemed like some kind of a deal had been worked out, and, of a compromise, President Trump, the Americans will be able to take pieces of Greenland and call them sovereign American territory, some sort of a compromise along those lines. They came out, Greenland, Denmark came out, no, absolutely, we're not even going to accept this deal. So this is really just throwing down the gauntlet to the Americans, even as they're talking about this this war, this long-term war against Russia. And it makes no sense, because you can do one or the other. You can make nice with America if you're going to wage a war against Russia, or you can make nice with Russia if you're going to wage some kind of a trade, economic, financial war against America. But you can't do both. And that was what was so peculiar. And to top it all off, there was Zelensky's tirade at Davos, in which he had at one and the same time berated the Europeans for being insufficiently belligerent, not doing enough for Ukraine, and he was offering Ukraine as the leader of Europe. That somehow, well, because you're so useless and so weak, whereas we are strong and experienced and we know how to fight, we Ukrainians will be the leaders of Europe. So that was really the cream on the cake, that this was now the offer. Ukraine will be the leader of this new Europe.
You know, Mark, all three of us have been following the so-called U.S.-Russia dialogue to end the conflict in Ukraine. But we didn't lead with this, okay? And the reason why we didn't lead with it is because I don't believe in it. Mark.
Yeah. First of all, let me just say on the last topic that Bart De Wever, the Belgian prime minister at Davos, said the quiet part out loud. And he said, in reference to the EU's relation to the United States, it's one thing to be a happy vassal. It's another thing entirely to be an unhappy slave. And at least they recognize where they are. And it must be said that when Zelensky lambasted them for not being enough of an anti-Russian extension of the Kiev regime, they applauded him for it. With regards to the talks, right now, there is the diplomatic process is essentially dead. What happened with the rushing of Witkoff and Kushner and Grunbaum to Moscow and the meeting in Dubai immediately afterwards, it wasn't about a settlement of the conflict. It was about a urgent demand for an energy strike ceasefire, because Russia has the Kiev regime, in a very bad place with the energy strikes.
Why would Russia agree to that, George? If you're winning, why do you hold yourself back, George?
I don't see that they would. Any incentive at all. And particularly is what would Russia gain from it? Because, neither Ukraine nor the United States is willing to make any of the concessions that Russia has asked for, has been asking for several years. So if they're not going to make any of those concessions, why should Russia then hold back and put forward this ceasefire on the energy infrastructure? No, absolutely. It's completely pointless.
So what's the next step, Mark? Or is it everyone just going through the motions right now? The Russians certainly don't want to be put in the position where they're not a partner to some kind of process. So it's just kabuki theater?
Yeah, it is kabuki theater. What's next is an escalation of the dirty and asymmetric war. And we saw that with the French pirates seizing another civilian tanker in the Med in the last week. That is their game. Forget freedom of navigation and maritime commerce. That no longer applies anymore, right? The West is going to attack civilian shipping if it trades with Russia.
Yeah, I guess we don't really have to keep bringing up international law anymore because it's gone. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here and we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosslog Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. George, let's change gears to the Board of Peace, as it's called. I saw the PowerPoint presentation that Jared Kushner gave at Davos. Good effort. I mean, it was colorful, but I'm not really sure what it's supposed to accomplish. Is it going to accomplish peace, or is it just going to be a new mandate with remarkably Tony Blair in the mix here? I mean, I know, Mark. A new mandate here. Is that going to bring peace?
Well, it's an open question. I think at this stage, you have to say they have moved to phase two. And, skeptics had said, well, that's not going to happen. There's just going to be a phase one release of the hostages and release of Palestinian prisoners. And that would be that. And then Israel would relaunch its war. And that could still happen. But then nonetheless, they've moved ahead to phase two. And they've created this very elaborate, almost incomprehensible structure whereby there's going to be this Board of Peace overseeing, the running of Gaza. And there's going to be an executive committee that includes Tony Blair. And then below the executive committee, there's going to be a liaison with a kind of the Palestinian government of technocrats, which has also now been at least the head of the Palestinian Committee has been appointed. So the one reason I think why one could at least make hope is that Trump seems to be engaged with this. And ultimately, if this Board of Peace, if there is no peace, if Israel does indeed relaunch its war, then there's not going to be a Board of Peace. And therefore, Trump will be humiliated and the whole thing is just going to collapse and no one's going to want to take part and so on. So given that Trump has set this up, given that he's made himself, you know, the chairman of the board for life, then he has an incentive in making sure that actually it's going to move towards peace. That doesn't mean it's going to happen, but at least there's some grounds for hope.
Yeah, well, Mark, I'm not sure it's going to bring peace, but the board may last a very long time, and maybe that's the ultimate goal for Donald Trump. I'm not really sure, particularly if I have to bring a billion in to sit at the table. But on a more serious note here, there's no governance here when it comes to the Palestinian issue. This is really a redo of what Kushner developed during Trump's first term. So, George and I have talked about this before. I mean, it's the only game in town, so I guess we have to at least observe and see where it goes. Obviously, we do not want the conflict to be like it has been for the last 2 years. But at this point, what is the alternative? And I think that's the sad part. What is the alternative?
Yeah, I think Trump is bored of peace, meaning B-O-R-E-D. Of peace. And he said as much in a letter that he published that he sent to the Prime Minister of Norway. He's piqued that the Norwegians did not give him the Nobel Peace Prize because of his belief that he stopped eight quadrillion wars or whatever. And he says, well, I don't feel obligated to be peaceful anymore. I mean, that's precisely what he said. And not that he's been peaceful so far. My last count was he's bombed 7 countries since he's been office has initiated or attempted at least several regime changes. The thing about this board of peace that he has set up is while it was originally presented as some neo-colonial governance of Gaza, the actual charter has nothing to do with Gaza. It doesn't mention Gaza. At all. He is setting this up and he's declared himself chairman of this new international organization for life, Don Dictator. I see this as a protection racket. This is him setting himself up. It's not parallel to the United Nations because it has nothing to do with the concept of international law or sovereignty or anything like this. This is Trump's personal grouping of lickspittle nations that want to curry his favor from around the world. And it's interesting that none of the Europeans, except for Hungary, Albania, and Kosovo, as if you count them as a state, which I certainly do not, none of the Europeans have joined this.
Bulgaria is in as well.
Bulgaria has joined as well. Well, I think that's
good for them.
The point than anything else. But also notice none of the BRICS countries, or at least the BRICS original countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, have joined it. And Putin's statement says, we're studying this. It warrants study. It's actually the same thing the Europeans have said, by the way. And we'll be glad to pay the $1 billion protection racket fee for entering your little club. You can take it out of our money that you've frozen in your country, which I just see as epic trolling. However, I do not believe that this board will last 1 minute after Trump is out of office in the United States, even if he imagines it might.
You know, but George, to be contrarian, which is what we're supposed to do on this program here, every other attempt to bring peace to this part of the world, that part of the world has failed. So why not try something different? Okay. I mean, and then there's always the caveat, why would Israel go along in the long term? Okay. We had this kind of kabuki theater where Netanyahu was against it. We weren't consulting all that, but then he found his place. Okay. It's interesting. He's on a board, but a Palestinian isn't, but it's something different. I mean, why not?
No, I think that's right. I think that it is different from previous agreements because the previous agreements was always Israel, the Palestinians, and then America as the would-be honors broker, but in reality, the dishonors broker. And of course, in those kind of agreements or whatever, The Palestinians always lost out because it was America and Israel versus the Palestinians. And of course, the Palestinians, being the weaker party, would always lose out. So now what's happened is that they have brought on an awful lot of other countries. And these are countries who do have an interest in securing something for the Palestinians, something, you know, to make sure that Israel is restrained, because now, you know, Egypt is on the board, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, all of the key Muslim powers are on board, and they do have an interest in making sure that Israel is restrained. So Israel, which, you know, would obviously like this whole peace or the ceasefire to come to an end, he has to consider the fact that Trump is not happy. Trump is vested in this border feast. It's his board. He set this up. He's the master with these 50 or whatever states that are going to be members of it. So it has to be very, very careful. It can't just simply relaunch its war and then have Trump be humiliated. So that's why at least there are some grounds for hope. And I'm not sure that the next man in will just simply abandon the border peace, because it's there. It's a going concern. So why would anyone want to abandon it?
Mark, Israel has made it very clear what it wants. It wants to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip. It's happening as we speak in the West Bank. They'll go along as long as they get the outcome that they want, okay? I mean, when looking at that PowerPoint presentation that Kushner gave, it's really eerie, because you don't have any sense of people being there. And that's the whole point, Mark.
Yeah. First of all, there never has been a ceasefire. Israel has continued airstrikes of Gaza this entire time. The difference between this and previous attempts is that Gaza has been destroyed this time. Yeah. There's barely a building left standing in Gaza and Rafah. There simply doesn't exist anymore. While Kushner is presenting the ghoulish Trump resort plans for a future Gaza and Rafah without the Palestinians, the BBC is quietly reporting on the fifth page about mass starvation of Palestinians under the Israeli chokehold that they still have on Palestine. The peace here is the peace of utter defeat and displacement of the Palestinian people. And the Trump Board of Peace, whatever it actually has to do with Gaza, is simply the papering over of that with international acceptance of this new state of affairs dictated by Don Trump, the dictator.
George, often there's the criticism, or at least observation, that this is just to circumvent the United Nations. Again, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons with the United Nations, but if this board of peace, which I don't think it can deliver peace, but if it could, why not go along with it? There's a sense of rigidity, I think, in some institutions that. You know, I don't know, if I were a teacher, UN gets like a C+, George.
Well, that's right. And I don't see it as an alternative to the UN, because if you are going to create an alternative to the UN, then you would much rather go down the path that Biden did with the so-called League of Democracies, or to use NATO and all its sort of satellites around the world and say, well, yeah, this is the alternative to the UN, because now we can just sort of get rid of Russia, get rid of China. We don't have them, you know, messing around with our plans. But this doesn't do that. In fact, Trump has invited on Russia. I mean, you know, as Mark says, I mean, we don't know whether Russia will accept, but nonetheless, Trump did invite Russia on. He's got Belarus is on. So if you bring in Russia, then you haven't really achieved your goals, the sort of the Western goal is to create an alternative to the UN because you've got Russia in. And therefore, you're still in the same problem, which is Russia's not going to go along with an alternative to the UN. Russia's not going to go along with any kind of a plan to create Western domination of the world. So therefore, that the sort of the plan to create an alternative to the UN, which I think Biden and the people around him wanted to create, this isn't it. That, you know, the border peace is not that alternative.
Well, I think that the board of peace, you know, when you distill it down to its very core, the board of peace is just all about Donald Trump. And that's the point. All right, gentlemen, on that note, I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.